Perspective with Jesse Zurawell on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Welcome to Perspective. I am Jesse Zurawell, your host for the hour. Rick Munn is with me today. Rick is a TNT colleague, and more importantly, and most importantly, he is a good friend. He hosts the show Locked and Loaded right here on TNT Radio, which you can tune into Monday through Friday from, I'm going to try to get the times right here, 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. GMT. And I don't have the other time zones in front of me. I apologize. Rick, did I get that correct?
No, you didn't. It's 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. But listen, you were close enough. I'm not going to fall out with you about it, all right?
I'll make sure I bring up the time so I can drop them later. But
it's all right.
We'll get it right. We'll get it right. How are you, my friend?
I'm good. I tell you, my friend, I don't know if you believe in miracles or not, but it's a miracle that I'm talking to you right now. At 2 minutes, 2 minutes to the hour, I remembered I was on tonight with you. I sprinted upstairs. I had no laptop. I sprinted downstairs. I brought the laptop up. I connected to Disc or Comrex. I had no audio. I took my headphones out. I plugged them into the computer. I connected. And bish, bash, bosh, here I am. It's a miracle. What do you say to that?
I agree. Just by the skin of your teeth, right?
I'm out of breath, man. I've been sprinting up and down the stairs, but I'm here. I'm settled, and I'm ready for whatever lies ahead, my friend. You just steer the way.
All right. Well, the Wall Street Journal reported yesterday that UK approves COVID-19 booster shot aimed at Omicron. Country is first to clear Moderna vaccine targeting virus's original strain and BA.1 variant, which is the so-called Omicron variant. So earlier in the year, we heard about the big pharma cartel rolling these new iterations of injections out that are still addressing the alleged initial strain of SARS-CoV-2, as well as new alleged strains that have developed. These are called bivalent vaccines in inverted commas. And in the US, they were given emergency use authorization without having to go through any safety trials whatsoever, because they are deemed or were deemed biologically similar to the injections that are already out there. And those injections are considered safe and effective in inverted commas. So these bivalent ones are considered safe and effective in inverted commas. But it seems like, as the Wall Street Journal is reporting, that the UK is going to be experimented on first with at least the Moderna version of this bivalent vaccine, quote unquote. So what say you to that?
Well, it seems at this point in time, the UK has gone injection on the brain. This new Moderna product, you know, it's been in testing for approximately 1 month on around 400 people. It's deemed to be safe and effective after the back of a 4-week test. So, of course, they're rolling it out to potentially millions of victims in the UK. That's if they line up and take it. You've got to also factor in that they're advising all children to get a polio shot, all children in London to get a polio shot after polio was found in some wastewater. They're obviously pushing the monkeypox shot. It's coming into September, which means the doctors will be rubbing their paws together to get their patients in to take their flu shot. And I wouldn't be at all surprised, as you mentioned, there's like a combi shot where they're talking about flu plus COVID booster. I would not be surprised if they slipped these COVID shots into flu shots. I don't know if they're going to do that or not, or if they'll tell people they're doing that or not. But at this point in time, Jesse, it's like the globalists have a vaccine or a needle fetish. They just can't get needles into arms quick enough or frequently enough, and they're going hell for leather now with the polio, monkeypox, flu shot, new Omicron bivalent or covalent shot or whatever they're marketing it as. Yeah, it's crazy, and Britain seems to be the testing ground. Yes, I would agree with that.
Yes, and in this article I've cited from the Wall Street Journal, Dame June Rain, let me get that correct, makes an appearance, who is, of course, the head of the MHRA in the UK. And she says, quote, "What this bivalent vaccine gives us is a sharpened tool in our armory to help protect us against this disease as the virus continues to evolve," unquote. So this is the woman who refuses to provide any pharmacovigilance data with regard to the injections that have currently been pushed into the UK's population. And she's excited and fully on board with this new iteration. These people have, you spoke of the globalists a moment ago, I would consider her, if not a globalist, one of their useful idiots, perhaps. One of their minions, nevertheless. Yeah. It's criminal that she can not only not provide pharmacovigilance data with regard to, specifically with regard to how the currently available injections are harming and killing the people of the UK, but that she can stand up and laud this as a sharpened tool in our armory to help protect us against this disease as the virus continues to evolve. None of these statements based on anything scientific or medical whatsoever, really. Based on myth, a myth that's been propagated and evolved itself since starting two and a half years ago. So what say you to Dame June Rain and people like her in the UK who are still trying to convince the public that not only do they need these injections, but that SARS-CoV-2 is a threat, a viral threat, that there's still this never-before-seen pathogen out there wreaking havoc on the population?
Well, at this point in time, if someone actually buys that, they are completely insulated. They are completely detached from reality, and they're completely gone, much the same as the people that are still wearing face masks alone in cars or when they're out walking alone outdoors on a summer day. I believe there are some people that are just so far gone, they're beyond reaching. They're completely gone. So if anyone's buying into this, the words of this dame, they need their head examined. There's one thing I will agree with her. She talks about this injection being a sharpened tool in their armory. Indeed it is, but it's not to protect people. It's a depopulation tool. So that much I agree with the dame. They do have another sharpened tool in their armory, but it is absolutely not for the purposes of preserving life, saving life, or lessening symptoms of what has effectively mutated into a bad cold at this point in time. And you compare that with what the Australian health officials are now saying, where they're in April, they were telling us how the you need your booster to stop infection and spreading it around. Now it's August. We have the same people standing in front of the camera saying, look, effectively, this will not stop your infection. You had the CDC changing their guidelines, telling the unvaccinated have to be treated the same as the vaccinated. Effectively, telling the world in not so many words that their product is completely unfit for purpose. It serves no purpose at all, except for the depopulation purpose, and it's doing a damn fine job of that. I don't know if you know this or not. This is literally just came out tonight, today. Matt Hancock, who was our so-called health minister during the scamdemic, who was very keen to discharge people, elderly folk, from hospitals into nursing homes to die and treat them with midazolam, which is a respiratory suppressant, so much so that he got the nickname Midazolam Matt. He was shamed after an affair. He has bubbled back up to the surface in an arch trolling move in an interview with The Express in the UK just today. I quote, "For 50 years, we've had a legal choice who we can love. For a decade, we've had a legal choice over who we can marry. I am now calling for a parliamentary inquiry and a free vote on assisted dying." So he's trying to push an assisted dying act through Parliament. And he's actually pictured sitting with one of his constituents, which is an extremely frail and sickly old man who I assume he wants to assist to die. And he's sitting there with a grin on his face, like the proverbial Cheshire Cat. Jesse, we have psychopaths and mass murderers in government, no doubt about it. Not hyperbole, not over exaggerating here, but they look inoffensive. They look like betas. They look like soy milk drinkers, but they're not. They're completely lethal. So Matt Hancock and this dame, whoever she is one of them. They're all cut from the same cloth. That's what I say.
So the assisted dying push is something I've been noticing on the periphery as far as at least corporate media reporting goes for quite some time now. I've noticed this being seeded in Australia, in the UK. In the US, we have somebody called Rahm Emanuel, who was a top advisor to Barack Obama when he was either president or campaigning. In any case, he was one of Obama's top guys. Well, his brother, Zeke Emanuel, Ezekiel, I believe is his full name, is a man who's involved in so-called bioethics and has been very active in pushing this so-called assisted dying or euthanasia, or perhaps we can call it what it is in a lot of circumstances, culling the elderly or the infirm or those deemed not fit for society. I think that there is a very fine line that separates somebody who's compass mentis and is deciding of their own volition that they want their life to end, and somebody who is being taken advantage of or pushed into that position for nefarious purposes on the part of the state and affiliated apparatuses. So what I see in people like Matt Hancock, Zeke Emanuel, others pushing this, doctors in Australia, I see them as on that side of the fine line of taking advantage of this for what I have to agree with you, I can only describe as pushing depopulation, whether they're aware of it or not. Because when I look at Matt Hancock speak and conduct himself, going back to sharpened tools, he doesn't seem like the sharpest tool in the shed. So one has to wonder. One has to wonder if he's aware of what kind of disgusting anti-human agenda he is helping push forward. But even if he's not, again, he's one of these people like June Rain who is useful to those who have that as a main part of their agenda. People like Bill Gates, for example, whose interests intertwine nicely with those of other globalists who perhaps aren't necessarily concerned about depopulation or experimenting on people. Perhaps they're concerned about monetary supremacy, but they have people below them like Matt Hancock to push this kind of culling on the population. Just a theory, an analysis, but I wonder what your take is on that.
Well, personally speaking, Hancock, I believe, is under no illusions as to what he's been doing, as to what he's been pushing when he ordered, for example, the midazolam back in March and April of 2020 during the first wave of lockdowns when these elderly folk were being discharged into nursing homes. I think he ordered, I don't have the exact facts that are figures to hand, but he ordered like a year or two's worth of midazolam in the space of 8 weeks. Okay, so he ordered like 1 to 2 years worth in 8 weeks and managed to get rid of it into people's bodies. Now, as you know, midazolam is a respiratory suppressant. It slows your breathing down. It's very, sensitive. So it doesn't take much to overdose someone with it and stop them from breathing altogether. Bearing in mind the people that were suffering from COVID had severe breathing difficulties and probably comorbidities like emphysema or some pulmonary issues with their lungs. So, I mean, it's effectively like waterboarding someone that's drowning. You know, it's like, this is to help you. I'm just going to put this wet rag over your face and submerge you under the water. Excuse me. So Hancock would have been under no illusions as to what that was. He had a team of people obviously advising him medically because he has no medical qualifications himself, but he had to sign it off, and he saw the death figures in nursing homes in particular spike like crazy, and under any other circumstances, whatever was being done would have been halted immediately for a public inquiry, much the same way as the young people that are taking myocarditis now, the massive increase in stillbirths and cancer spikes, all cause mortalities. At any other time in history, everything would grind to a halt until they got to the bottom of all this. But midazolam Matt was allowed to continue, carry on regardless. And then he sloped out of his job, allegedly because he had had an affair with one of his aides. Whether he did or not, it looked very staged to me. But he exited stage left. But I think he's a troll. I think he gets a perverse kick out of the fact that he's caused millions of people to suffer, families to suffer, and many people to die. And ironically, when he did a fundraiser over the summer for, I think it was the Children's Hospice, where he ran the London Marathon in the streets of London, grinning at people and waving at them and encouraging them to go fund me a big donation for dying children. So sick, my friend, it's beyond sick, but he does it with a smile and he looks kind of inoffensive and he says he's doing it for the best, so people suck it up. But like Gates, who's a psychopath, beyond psychopaths, he does it with a grin, cheesy, self-serving smugness, and to me, they know exactly what they're at, my friend, and they're getting a serious perverse kick out of it.
And you bring up a good point with the midazolam, which in the UK was and still is, as far as I know, being used on so-called COVID patients in concert with morphine, which is essentially a lethal injection in its own right. You inject somebody with midazolam and morphine, it's essentially good night. But the excuse for this is we don't want the patients to get, how do you put it, too disturbed, too afraid to lash it to, the word is escaping me right now, but somebody who can't breathe because of respiratory trouble.
Yeah. Someone who was it's like an asphyxiation. And what they said was, the justification was, if it was your father or mother or your wife or your partner or your husband or your wife, and you were at the hospital, obviously they won't let you in. They wouldn't let people in to see these people. So the message would be given, Jesse, listen, I'm sorry, your dad is in extreme distress. He is on his way out anyway. We want to make it as comfortable for him as possible. So we're going to give him some shots. Are you okay with that? Or do you want him to suffer horribly in the last hours of his life? And of course, many family members were distraught. They weren't allowed in to see their families. They had to sometimes say goodbye on iPads. So the NHS invested heavily in iPads so people could wave goodbye to their dying relatives in these hospital beds. And this is true as well. I don't know if you know this or not, but DNR notices were routinely put over the beds of elderly people and people with learning disabilities. Okay, yes. So if you had a learning disability or you had a mental illness or you were had like Down syndrome and you were in the hospital, you got an automatic DNR notice slapped over your head, which again, the families weren't allowed to come in and contest that. That was the protocol. That was the way it worked. It's a machine. They called it, they had a name for it, I think, the Liverpool Pathway to Death, which was supposed to make dying a pleasant and as an experience as possible through a lethal drug cocktail, not unlike what you would get in some death chamber in a Utah penitentiary when it happened in the NHS.
we've had the same... The same frantic, by the way, was the word I was searching for. We've had the same pathway to death here using remdesivir, which is now not just emergency use authorized, but approved for use in children, in infants, even, which is a whole conversation unto itself, given the massive toxicity of remdesivir, but it was used in much the same way. It's still being used in much the same way that midazolam has been used. So more proof, I would say, of the lockstep nature of this truly evil agenda, this nightmare we've all been experiencing for the past 2.5 years. We need to throw it to a quick break, but when we come back, I want to, well, put some more news to you and get your informed opinion, because I always look forward to what your take is on the madness that is ceaseless. So everybody hang tight, and I'll be right back with Rick Munn here on TNT Radio after this.
You should hear what Mike Ryan's talking about.
The world is in deep doo-doos. It is really in deep doo-doos. Today I had my rant at work, thinking about how they have destroyed the world that we knew prior to COVID, to that plandemic. It all starts to come together, doesn't it? Now, COVID lockdowns scare the bejeebers, bring in the emergency use authorizations, bring in talk about other things such as monkeypox and climate change. All planned, all, and it's all predictable. And what's going to happen is that they will get what they want. There is absolutely no way we're going to stop this terrifying climate change scenario that they're throwing at us.
Mike Ryan on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Unlike other health concerns, mental illness is not always easy to see. Depression won't show up on an eye chart, and you won't find PTSD by looking at a thermometer. Sorting out a mental health concern takes professional diagnosis and treatment. Anxiety won't just go away under a bandage. If you or a loved one has a mental health concern, call 1-800-662-HELP for free and confidential information and treatment referral. Learn more at samhsa.gov/support.
In times of fear, World Vision is there for the most vulnerable. For the last 70 years, we've been standing with kids and families through natural disasters, war, and disease, delivering life-saving aid and helping rebuild lives. And with every act of courage, faith, and love, we do more than just stop the spread of fear. We replace it with hope. Learn more at worldvision.org.
The Great Reinfection. With thanks to the COVID vaccine, COVID vaccines are not safe and don't work. Today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Welcome back to Perspective here on TNT Radio, where we are live 24/7. You can find us on your preferred streaming app. That's whether that's Apple, Google Play, Spotify. We are on all the major ones. We are on YouTube, Rumble, Odyssey. You can find us on our very own app, our TNT Radio app. And of course, you can find us at tntradio.live. Everywhere we're available, you can listen to us live or you can listen to back episodes. So do so if you're so inclined. I'm speaking with my TNT colleague and good friend, Rick Munn, host of the Locked and Loaded show, which airs Monday through Friday, 7 to 10 p.m. Brisbane time, 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. London time, and 5 a.m. to 8 a.m. New York time. I'm very happy to say that I join him each and every Monday for the final hour of his program. So once again, if you're so inclined, do tune in, but also tune in to all of his programs. They're excellent. Last night, Rick, I listened to your conversation with Dr. Bruce Scott. What a great conversation. Mm-hmm. What a great guy. I'd love to speak with him to pick his brain for an hour. So much I could ask him. But suffice it to say that your show is essential listening. So
thank you.
Of course. So somebody on Telegram last week, I believe it was on the channel that is run by Robin Minotti, Dr. Mike Eden, and Corey Morningstar. I believe it was posted on there. A Telegraph article from May of 2012 titled, "Keeping the Country Short of Water is Now Government and EU Policy." The subheader reads, "Failure to fix leaks and increase reservoir capacity are behind our water problems." And this was astonishing to read. I had to find an archived version of it because much of the Telegraph, like much of failing corporate media, is behind a paywall these days. Mm-hmm. But I read it and it's a commentary piece, but nonetheless, extremely relevant to what's going on today with droughts or imminent droughts in the UK being declared, which is, of course, are part and parcel of the global climate emergency that we're supposedly experiencing and which is supposedly going to get worse. But if you look outside, if you walk outside, there's no emergency. Unless you buy into this utterly unproven, unscientific myth that CO2 is causing the warming of the planet and are freaked out by that, there's really nothing to see, nothing to be worried about here, which is not to say there aren't environmental problems on the ground, which should be very concerning. Mm-hmm. Like, for example, the masks that are polluting waterways around the world, the masks that people were told to and forced to wear over the past 2.5 years. Those are environmental problems. Pollution is an environmental problem. Global warming? Mm-hmm. No, it's a myth to push forward an agenda that does have something to do with depopulation as well as creating new markets for the globalists to supplant the market system that is currently going the way of the dodo. But the astonishing thing to see, the most astonishing thing to see, was that this has been on the radar, so to speak, for over 10 years now. And here it is, 10 years after 2012, being pushed again as sort of in an apocalyptic way. And we can see that it's completely manufactured, it's engineered. But the maniacs pushing it, they're still going for it, much like they're still going for the injections we talked about in the previous segment. So I want to get your take on that and what the scuttlebutt, so to speak, has been in your neck of the woods with regard to these droughts or impending droughts.
Well, in my neck of the woods, in Northern Ireland, they're embracing, or the political parties are embracing net zero and the green agenda with a passion. They want to, for example, on the agriculture side of things, in the Republic of Ireland, they are replacing arable farmland with vast solar panel farms, putting wind turbines on what were viable fields to grow crops. They're offering farmers around 5,000 euro per head of cattle to get rid of them or to cull them when they wouldn't be worth any more than 1,500. So you're talking about a 3x+ markup in the value of their herd if they destroy them. If they don't destroy them, they get nothing basically, and they'll continue to be squeezed for, you know, milk quotas and lose progressively more and more money in the farming business. So politicians are embracing that. Within Northern Ireland, they're aiming to get rid of 1 million head of cattle to reduce pollution, greenhouse gases. But in reality, what they'll do is, somewhere like Brazil, for example, is massively increasing their beef herd. So if you want meat in Ireland, they will simply import it, or, you know, import it from Brazil at a massively increased cost, and effectively making it out of the price range for most people. There's so many things with the climate thing that you mentioned there that they're pushing that are untrue. So they're saying about rising sea levels. If you look at any comparative photographs over the last 100 years, there's many, many places, you know, will show a picture of a place in, you know, 1922 versus 2022. There has been absolutely no rise in sea levels generally. Global warming at the minute, we're actually, it's 15 degrees here in Northern Ireland in high summer. We had a few hot days since June. That's about it. We're not suffering from global warming. CO2 actually increases plant growth and stimulates plant growth. So an increase in CO2 is not necessarily a bad thing. And as far as drought, and you mentioned, you know, provisions being made with building more reservoirs, you know, using hydropower more efficiently if they want to tap into efficient green energy. It's not being done in much the same way as hospitals have not been invested in, infrastructure has not been invested in, but yet we're told we have a problem now, and because they have done nothing to address it over the last however many decades, the solution is to cut everything back, reduce our access to it, or make it vastly expensive that we can't actually afford to have it, and that's their proposed solution. So it's a great tool. This whole green net zero climate thing is a fantastic tool to declare emergencies, to declare droughts, to declare global warming, and say that if we don't act, we're all going to die, our children are all going to die, and it's going to be just hell on earth, much the same as they did with the COVID scandemic. And look at the buy-in to that. Look at the state the world is in as a result. So yeah, it's just repackaged as climate now, and of course nothing's being done. Billions are being pumped into Ukraine. Billions are being pumped into government agencies, setting up track and trace apps, etc. Nothing's being invested into the infrastructure for the health service itself, which speaks volumes. You know, they talk about saving the health service and saving the NHS. They want to privatize it and unload it. It's a millstone around their necks, and it's something they don't want us to have access to. So I don't know if that makes any sense, but yes, I concur with what you said. There's been no affirmative actions taken over the last 10 years. They've just acknowledged there's a problem, and they're now telling us it's got worse. So nothing's been done. So we're going to get squeezed. That's all there is to it.
Right. And it's not as if they're acknowledging the problem and they don't know what to do about it, or there's nothing they can do about it. They're willfully either not doing anything about it or taking measures that only increase the damage that has already been done. So with regard to the obliteration of the NHS, this is something I talk about with Debbie Evans of UK Column on a weekly basis on this program, because she's a retired state registered nurse who worked for a long time for the NHS, and she laments all the time about how the NHS today is nowhere near the NHS she knew when she worked for the entity and was proud to do so, because it was a true public health service that treated people well, treated people with dignity. And it's been intentionally collapsed by measures that didn't have to be carried out. So one example for people who aren't familiar is the ambulance service and how long people have to wait if they call an ambulance. She said some people now are waiting up to 27 hours for an ambulance to show up. And some of these are people who are calling because on behalf of somebody who's had a heart attack, for example, you can't wait even an hour for somebody who's had a heart attack. It's so waiting a day plus 3 hours. It's a death sentence, right?
It's Russian roulette, man. If you don't live within driving distance of a hospital or have a family member that can drive you to a hospital when you take a heart attack, you're dead. End off. That's all there is to it. Or like elderly people that fall and break their hips. Like, that's probably the most painful thing that can happen to you. We're hearing stories over here of elderly people who have fallen when they dial 911 or they have like an emergency tag around their neck, many of them, that puts them through to a call center. They explain what has happened and they say, look, you're just going to have to wait until the ambulance arrive. You know, they're 80 odd years of age. They're frail. They've got osteoporosis. They've just shattered their hip. They're in indescribable pain, and they're being told it could be a 27 hour wait for an ambulance. And then when you get to the hospital, you have to wait in the ambulance until you get triaged, and then a doctor will see you. It's a death sentence, man, you know. So listen, piece of advice for our lovely listeners out there, if you can move close to a hospital or at least get a taxi firm that will agree to come out at any time and you'll pay them $50 or $100 to do it, that should be your ambulance service. Don't rely on the NHS if you want to live.
Right. And if you're lucky enough to get an ambulance to pick you up, it's a whole other story once you get to hospital as to when you're going to get into the hospital. There are queues of ambulances outside of the hospitals having to wait to essentially discharge whomever they've picked up into the hospital itself, sometimes waiting for hours and hours on end, adding to, let's say, the 27 hours somebody's already had to wait for the ambulance just to show up. And this is a problem that could be relatively easily solved, but it's not being relatively easily solved for intentional reasons. We can all see it. We can all read the writing on the wall. And it's infuriating to see, because its intent is obviously to harm people, to increase harm, to increase fear among those who aren't hurt but may hurt themselves in the near future, the frail, for example, and wonder if they're going to be able to get picked up by an ambulance, let alone into a hospital to receive the treatment they need. And then, of course, once they get into the hospital, what are they going to be subjected to? A COVID test, a swab to determine if they have SARS-CoV-2. Again, as if this is the the bubonic plague going around.
Yeah.
A so-called virus, which has never been proven to exist. And that's a fact. That's not a conspiracy theory. Mm-hmm. That is a fact. Mm-hmm. You can go back to the very first paper that claimed to have isolated SARS-CoV-2. And it admits very deep down that, no, we've never isolated it. But in the abstract, it says it was isolated. Every paper subsequently took the abstract and used that as their basis of study, of proof, of observation. And the lie, the myth kept perpetuating. And here we are today in the U.S., hospitals still being incentivized to diagnose patients with SARS-CoV-2, COVID-19, to intubate them if such is their diagnosis, and to kill them
if such is their diagnosis. I worked for years as a financial advisor for a multinational bank, and we were incentivized to sell certain products. How did they incentivize us? Well, they said, if you sell this, we'll pay you more money, okay? And the old adage was that the quality of the advice was solely dependent or directly proportional to the amount of commission that you were going to make. So back in the day, a lot of people made a lot of money by advising people what they said was the best course of action, but it was highly influenced by the amount of commission that they would make, okay? So for example, let me give you an example. If you had £100 a month of disposable income or $100 a month to invest in something, okay, and I came out and assessed your needs, and your needs, for example, were life insurance with critical illness cover. That's what you should put your $100 a month into to protect your family if you die, etc. But it didn't pay me very much money. All of a sudden, I might be trying to steer you into making a pension contribution, not because it's the best thing for you, but because it's the best thing for me as the advisor. I would get paid more money for the same investment from you. It didn't matter to you. The outgoing from you was still $100 a month, but the income to me would be vastly different depending on what product you went into. So it was, how would you say, it tainted the advice, let's just say. And that was the case right across the board. And I was guilty of it at a time. It's one of the reasons why I came out of the industry, because I couldn't do it anymore. My conscience got the better of me. And I started to develop relationships with people that became friends. And I just said, listen, this is not the best thing for you to do. I would advise you to go elsewhere. I was self-employed then. I had to fold the business because I literally was turning business away. Okay. But it was at least the right advice, even though there was nothing in it for me. So with these hospitals and doctors and GPs, you know, they were incentivized £15 per shot if they give the COVID injection. That went up to £25 per shot if it was a 15-year-old or under. How they justified that, again, it was to try and increase the uptake in the under 16s. So they incentivized the GPs by throwing an extra 10 or a shot on top of the 15 that they were getting. And of course, then there was a drive from the health center. So all of this, Jesse, all of this has been driven by money. If you're admitted with COVID, there's a bonus. If you're on a ventilator, they get a bonus. If you they die and you get COVID on the death certificate, there's a bonus. It's incentivized murder. It's incentive. It's like a contract. If I want you to go out and kill your next door neighbor, you're not going to do it for free. But if you're struggling and I say there's 50 G's in it for you, you might just consider it. It's effectively, they're taking a contract in our life, my friend. And that's what they're doing. That's how they're doing it, by these incentives through the hospital. It's contract killing, let me just say, repackaged as healthcare.
Yes. In the U.S., it's been done by CMS, or the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, which is an arm of the state. So the state's been incentivizing hospitals to diagnose people a certain way, to inject them, to murder them if need be, depending on the hospital's financial situation. And I think more of this is then so far is going to come to light in the future, and good for that. And a lot of people are going to, well, I don't know what kind of fate they're going to meet, but hopefully it's in line with the acts they've carried out, whatever that may be. Yeah. So we need to throw it to one more quick break, and then I want to round off the conversation by bringing some of what we've been talking about international, because it's very easy to focus on what we've been talking about happening in the Western world, but this is happening on a worldwide basis, including in Russia and China and states in the so-called multipolar New World Order. And it's important to point that out because this is still the same lockstep agenda that is being perpetrated on humanity. So we can't ignore one aspect of it because it disrupts a narrative we want to be true. Something I've been saying for quite some time now, probably ad nauseum, but it still needs to be said. So everybody, once again, hang tight, and I'll be right back with Rick Mann here on TNT Radio after this.
U.S. President Joe Biden and China are now claiming they can control the global weather. This is Mark Morano for TNT Radio's Morano Minute. Stay tuned.
From Washington, D.C., this is the Morano Minute with your host, TNT Radio's Mark Morano.
We have the capacity to do this. It's not like it's beyond our control. The weather may be beyond our control for now, but it's not beyond our control.
Perhaps President Biden believes his pork barrel spending bill in Washington is what's going to control the weather. Who knows? But we do know that President Biden joins Bill Gates and China in seeking to control the weather. The World Economic Forum has touted China's ability to, quote, control the weather with cloud seeding to create rain. They even have a weather modification department. Yes, Bill Gates has a venture aimed to spray dust into the atmosphere to block the sun. What could go wrong? Plenty. Who doesn't want China and Bill Gates trying to control the weather? You're a science denier if you're opposed to it. This is Mark Morano for the Morano Minute on TNT Radio.
We're at a party. Three little kids were playing in the pool, all under five. Adults were busy talking, glanced over, noticed a little one underwater. I think she needs help. That's how easily something can happen. It only takes a few seconds. Don't worry, the party had a happy ending. But we need to remember, fence the pool, shut the gate. Teach your kids to swim, it's great. Supervise, watch your mate, and learn how to resuscitate. I'm Laurie Lawrence. Kids Alive, do the five.
When you remember this year's holiday, will you think of the waves gently lapping on the shore? The sun setting over rolling hills? Or sat bored out of your mind with a flat tire, waiting for a recovery truck? 1 in 5 motorway breakdowns are caused by tire problems. Before you set off, check your tire pressure. Highways England.
Democracy in action. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to Perspective. I'm Jesse Zerwell, and I am speaking with Rick Mann, host of the Locked and Loaded show here on TNT Radio, a very good friend. We've been talking about the injection and climate change madness the globalists' predator class is still foisting on humanity. And this is not just a Western world problem. We're seeing this in Russia, and we're seeing this in China as well, two countries which are being widely celebrated as spearheading what's been called the multipolar New World Order. But it behooves us to look at what they are doing with regard to this anti-human agenda, with regard to COVID-19 and so-called climate change. In Russia, more and more mandates are coming back into effect, including with masks / face diapers, including with mandatory injections. And I'm going to be getting into this in some detail tomorrow and Friday with Riley Wagaman, who's been a guest on the program before. He's written so far a 4-part series looking at, in particular, Putin and where he stands with regard to these mandates, but also where the Russian government stands with regard to these mandates. I recommend reading those pieces if you haven't. very illuminating. But in China, Rick, I read yesterday on the rthk.hk website, which is a news site based in Hong Kong, an article, Threshold Lowered for COVID Jab Outreach Services. And in the article, which is quite brief but very informative, it reads, the government says it will be arranging more COVID vaccine outreach services for kindergartens and child daycare centers to boost the vaccination rate among toddlers. Outreach vaccination teams previously visited these venues when at least 30 people needed a jab, but that number has now been lowered to 10. Civil Service Minister Ingrid Young said the change was made to cater for smaller kindergartens and daycare centers, adding that she hopes more toddlers will get jabbed when schools resume next month. So in China and in Russia, as I'll get into later in the week, they are pursuing the same predatory agenda with regard to children, toddlers, infants. I don't know about infants yet, but certainly toddlers who do not need this injection, nobody does, and are not at risk whatsoever from SARS-CoV-2 or COVID-19. So in the few minutes we have left, I just want to get your take on this, because a lot of alt media that does very good work reporting on the COVID insanity tends to focus exclusively on the West and ignore what places like China are doing, not just with lockdowns and surveillance, but with the injections themselves. So I'd just like to get your perspective on this other side, if you will, of the agenda.
Well, very, very quickly and very briefly, let me try and squeeze as much in as I can. We're talking about China here. The only thing that matters in China is the Communist Party. So if people are being assisted and shown compassion by the Communist Party, we want to reach out to these hard to reach areas. We want to lower the threshold. We want to come and make sure your children are injected. It will benefit no one bar the Communist Party. And I'm reminded of the words of the late Ronald Reagan, when he once said that the most frightening thing you could ever hope to hear was someone arriving at your door to say, I'm from the government and I'm here to help you. I think that applies not more so than Xi Jinping's minions in China. So yeah, you can read into that what you like. In all the wars and the conflicts and the brokerings and the sanctions that are being applied, people lose sight of the fact that these ridiculous mandates and ridiculous masking rituals are also in force in Russia and in China. They don't escape from it. In fact, it's terrible in China. So yeah, you can't escape from this. They're really pushing the envelope with that too. And if they're dispatching more people into rural areas to get smaller groups and give them their shot, it's not for the benefit of those little rural groups and those little kids, God bless them, over in China. It's for the benefit of whatever agenda that they're pushing. And I believe it's a global depopulation agenda. Doesn't matter who you come from, where you live, who you're under, what your political beliefs are, everyone is in the globalist predator crosshairs, and that includes kids in that rural China.
Yes, absolutely. And I've been told by people responding to my work that I shouldn't be covering this because it adds to Russophobia and xenophobia that is prevalent now. And my response to that is, I'm not exposing this out of any disdain for Russians or Chinese. In fact, I grew up in a household where both Ukrainian and Russian were spoken very often. My father had many Russian friends with whom I interacted plenty when I was a youth. I have no Russophobia. I have no xenophobia. this is about calling it as it is. And I'm not going to be told that I can't talk about it because of some woke mentality claiming that it's racist to do so. So it needs to be
hell with them, Jesse, to hell with them.
Yeah,
the woke people, that is not the Russians.
right. And it needs to be brought up if we're going to grasp the totality of what's going on. It behooves us to do so. Indeed. Rick Munn, thank you very much, as always, for joining me and your perspectives.
You're welcome.
And I look forward to chatting again soon, both on my program and yours. So be well, sir, until we talk again. And again, thank you very much.